It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday. We'll talk about cooking with a focus on simplicity, low cost, and healthfulness. And we'll look at some immediate ways to become a better cook. First, many people have had to deal with the disappointment of canceling travel plans in the last 8 or 9 months, and future travel plans, they're still up in the air. But hardly anyone has had to cancel as many plans as Rick Steves, travel writer and public TV host of Rick Steves Europe. He had expected to host more than 30,000 tourists on more than 1,000 bus tours through October. But he's learning some valuable lessons about using a traveler's mindset in his everyday life. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Nice to be with you.
Well, Rick, you travel as a way of life, as your job in so many ways. Has it dawned on you that that was going to be off the table for the foreseeable future? What went through your head?
Oh, no. This really blindsided me. I was, as you mentioned, my work was just ramping up. Last year was our best year ever. We took 30,000 people on our bus tours around Europe. My guidebooks were just jamming. I think 25 out of the top 30 guidebooks in the United States to Europe had my name on the cover. And I had just hosted 100 of my guides at my office here in Seattle. And that was back in, I think, late January. And we were just euphoric. It was going to be our best year ever. And then, we had this big week-long workshop with our guides. They all flew home. You know, we were almost sold out for our tours. And then just like a tsunami, it just swept through us. And now we've had zero revenue. My guides are unemployed in Europe. And I've got 100 people on my staff here in Seattle that we're still together. But we're just hunkered down and trying to be patient and doing our best. You know, it's... we've been through a lot of crises in 30 years of leading groups around Europe and writing guidebooks and so on, but nothing like this. And I look out my window and I just have to remember, for a lot of people, they wish they had tours of Europe to cancel. And, life is tough across the board. So we're all in this together and we have to stay together and be a good community.
Well, you write that you've... been able to think about travel and the traveler's mindset and why we do it. With this time on your hands, what kind of realizations have you come to?
It's occurred to me, and I've never had to think about this before, because for the last 30 years, I've spent 100 days in Europe. This is my first summer home in 30 years. And I'm realizing that you don't need to get on an airplane to be a traveler. To me, there's a traveler's mindset, Rob, and it's a curiosity, it's an openness, it's a eagerness to get out of our comfort zone and try something different. I've been able to actually employ that sort of mindset here at home, and I find that it's really an important life skill. So, you know, I've had more people, interview me and have me on their TV or radio shows. Ironically, when I'm home not traveling, when I am doing my thing in Europe. And we're all locked down to a certain degree. And a lot of us have had our hopes and dreams dashed and carefully laid plans derailed. And I'm certainly in that category. But I think it's a chance for us to pause. I'm sort of addicted to productivity and I'm kind of a workaholic. And this is therapy for somebody who's addicted to productivity. It's God's way of reminding us to just take a breath and slow down. And there's other things in life, and we have a lot to be thankful for.
Well, I've done something that you've done and lots of people have done. Instead of getting on a plane or going on a road trip, I've gone for a ton of walks around my neighborhood. And you have done that with a traveler's eye. Can you share with the rest of us how to, take what seems really familiar and think of our backyard as a travel opportunity?
Well, yeah. I mean, just the other day I was walking home and I saw a snail on my neighbor's fence. And I got to admit, all I could think was escargot. You know, I'd love to be in France having some escargot right now. But for me, I've just been astounded, frankly, at how many dimensions to life I was not respecting, not appreciating, oblivious to. Very basic stuff. I almost feel embarrassed that I didn't know how to use my oven. You know, I'm a busy person. I just have leftover takeout food and so on. And I'm just love my work and I'm focused on that. But now I'm learning how to cook. I had not turned on my oven in the 8 years I've owned this house. And now I'm friends with my oven. I cut through an onion at the beginning of this COVID lockdown. And I realized I've never felt a knife cutting through a nice crispy onion before. And I almost like jumped for joy. It was like one of the things I experienced in Europe for my first time, but right at home. I've never really understood people who, have dogs as a big part of their life. I have to admit, I didn't even have a healthy attitude about that. Now dogs are a big part of my life. I've got a hummingbird feeder on my deck. I'm doing different things. I dusted off my trumpet. It's been in darkness since I was in college, and I'm playing my trumpet when the sun goes down for my neighborhood. You know, it's taps time every time the sun goes down, and it's just sort of a celebration of life that we can do right here. And I do think it's very important. One beautiful thing, or not beautiful, one instructive thing about this whole pandemic is a reminder that this pandemic does not recognize different borders, different ethnic groups, different economic classes. I mean, we're all in this together. And, when you walk out, you realize this is a community, and there's a lot of people struggling in ways that we might not be mindful of. And it's just a great opportunity to embrace the simple things and be positive and recognize that we need each other and we need our environment, and we're all in this together. You know, we get that when we travel. We can also get that when we employ a traveler's mindset right here at home.
We're talking to travel writer Rick Steves, public television host of Rick Steves Europe. He's talking about taking a traveler's mindset into a slower pace of life during the pandemic, appreciating the things in and around our own homes. Share some more thoughts, Rick, of lessons you've picked up as a traveler around the world and how to capture that traveler mentality even when we're not hopping on the plane to go somewhere.
Well, it is really the cool thing about travel is travel lets you celebrate different things. It gets you out of your comfort zone. I always like to say it carbonates your life. Well, you know, I grew up thinking, cheese was no big deal. For me, when I was a kid, cheese was orange and the shape of the bread. And then you go to France and, these cheese shops are just festivals of mold. And the cheesemonger is evangelical. And his favorite thing is to find an American bumpkin and introduce him to the greatest cheese. I'm sure in Wisconsin, people appreciate cheese. And you go to Europe and you realize a lot of people spend a lot of money for fancy, stinky cheese. Now, you don't have to do that. But when you come home, you have that option to be excited about stinky, expensive cheese. And I really appreciate that. I don't need to embrace these ideas when I get home, but it's nice to know that they're really important for other people. When I travel, I try to be a cultural chameleon. That means I almost physically change. When I'm, I never go home after a long day of work here in Seattle and feel like a nice cloudy glass of ouzo. But when I'm in Greece, after a long day of sightseeing, I love to sit down and watch the boats in the harbor and nurse a nice cloudy glass of ouzo. I don't really understand tea in this hemisphere, but when I'm in England, I love a spot of tea, and when I'm in Scotland, I have a little nip of whiskey every evening. And when I'm in Tuscany, I have a nice corposo, a nice full-bodied glass of red wine. I don't feel like a nice corposo glass of red wine in Norway, and I certainly don't feel like that in Ireland, but in Ireland, I feel like a Guinness. So, that's the joy of travel. It gets us out of our comfort zone, and you almost have to do it when you're on the road. But you can do that right here at home, too. And again, that just it just makes your life have more colors in the palette. It makes the weave of your life a little more interesting. And we can do that. And we need to be bold. We need to try new things. I'm enjoying my piano like never before. I've enjoyed just turning out the lights and playing the piano, just letting chords move me from one direction to another. And it's a new fun little game I play. And I've had my piano ever since I was a kid, but I've never played this chords in the dark game. So we can do that. And again, it's that traveler's mindset. And then when the day comes that we can travel again, we'll be like birds that are let out of the cage. We'll be able to go explore the world and also use that wonderful mindset.
Let's bring on a caller. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So I just want to say first, Rick, I love your show. I think it's fantastic. I've learned so much from watching you. But second, I've been watching a whole lot of your episodes on public television here in Milwaukee, and I sit and I draw and paint and get inspiration from some of your travels, and that's really been helping me get through the whole COVID self-isolation or whatever.
Thank you, Marcus. I love that thought. And, you know, one thing we're trying to do right now, because we know a lot of people are frustrated and sort of life is, you know, just difficult this year in so many ways. And we're trying to give people what we call a daily dose of Europe. On my Facebook page, I'm serializing my new book, which is called For the Love of Europe, and it's 100 essays. And every day we have a different essay about Europe. All of our TV shows are available for free anytime streaming on our ricksteves.com website. So we've got 100 different TV shows there. We've even got a program for teachers called Classroom Europe, where I've cut my shows into 500 little teachable, streamable clips, about 5 minutes each. So a teacher can type in water lilies and get everything we've ever done on Monet. And they could type in, you know, Leonardo and get everything we've done about Leonardo da Vinci. And they could type in, bulls and learn about the running of the bulls in Pamplona. So it's fun for people to be able to kind of bring a little bit of their travel into their world. And I'm so thankful to have public broadcasting to share my love of travel, both on TV and on radio.
We're talking with Rick Steves, host of the public television series Rick Steves Europe and host of the podcast Travel with Rick Steves. And we want to hear from you. Have you been able to find or rediscover some wonders in your own home or your own neighborhood? Has staying closer to home made you more aware or appreciative of things that are within reach? Tweet us at Central Time WPR and let us know. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with public TV and podcast host Rick Steves. And we want to hear from you. Has sticking closer to home had any surprising benefits for you? Has it made you appreciate your past travels more? If you're an avid traveler who's had to slow down, how have you been finding joy instead? Tweet us at Central Time WPR and let us know. Let's go back to your calls now. Julie is with us in Appleton. Julie, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share, I'm someone who has always liked to travel and go somewhere for a long period of time and just stay and just sort of live life there, and I miss that. But I found a website over the weekend that I found so poignant. It's called windowswap.com. Oh, yeah. It's window-swap.com, and what it is anyone in the world can share the view from out their window. You post a video of about 10 minutes, audio and visual. And when you go on the site, you just click through and you can just literally look out people's windows all over the world, which right now just feels really meaningful, kind of sad, but also
Julie,
really beautiful and exciting.
I saw this too, and I got to say I had an emotional reaction, you know, watching a rainstorm outside of somebody's window in India, or, you know, a view of a window out of Berlin. It was very touching. You too?
Oh, I love
Absolutely.
That. That's a great idea, Julie.
Thank you, Julie, for the call. Rick, online isn't the same as real, but there's something there.
Well, we got to be creative right now to get us through this. And I go through a series. When I'm in Europe, I love to open the shutter in the morning. Sometimes I travel around so fast, I almost have to try to go, now, where am I today? And I throw open the shutters. You know, they've got these wonderful wooden louvered shutters, and I throw them open, and then there's this beautiful scene out the window, and the light is warm as the sun is low in the sky. It's a beautiful thing, and I just love that idea that Julie mentioned. I got to say, we're dealing with a lot of people that are homesick for their travels. And you mentioned you've got a cool thing at your station, Rob, where you share people's photographs. We made a poster called Europe's Top 20 No Travel Tips. I put it on my Facebook page at Rick Steves on Facebook. And we asked everybody to, how can you bring a little bit of Europe into your house just so you can get through this lockdown? And, you know, it's just a goofy list of 20 favorite tips. When your quarantine partner asks for water, you can say gas or no gas. when your kids get into the car, you can say, mind the gap. You know, if you're missing all those wonderful European fountains, you can throw coins into your neighbor's bird bath and on. So that's something, if you wanted to put it on your website, you could, but people can find that on our Facebook page.
I love it. Thanks so much for that call, Julie. I'm right there with you. Tom joins us next in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi, Mr. Steves. First, I want to thank you for the contributions you've made with your travel programs. I traveled in my early 20s overseas for a couple of years. I haven't been back, so I actually watch your programs just to keep up on things. But also
nice.
Particularly, your history of fascism in Europe. It's a very powerful program. I would recommend that to all of our American viewers. Listeners now. It's an excellent program. I've watched that many times, and I think I've slowly begun to understand the implications for the United States.
You know, Tom, but that is so, thank you for bringing that up, because I'm a historian, and I really firmly believe that we can learn from history. History is speaking to us, and Europe learned a lot the hard way back in the 1930s. And there are wannabe autocrats all over this world right now, both on the left and on the right, that read out of kind of the same playbook about how they can derail their democracies. So we produced this show, and it was a surprise hit on public television. And it's just a one-hour look at the lessons that Europe learned from fascism, as half of Europe was fascist. It wasn't just Germany, you know. And it's just fascinating. And you mentioned you can watch it several times. It's so poignant. It's so real. And again, people can search for that, or they can find it on my website. And it's just Rick Steves' fascism, basically. And it is quite timely.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. And that makes me think, Rick, we can do some studying up now, even if we're not there, so that if and when we get to travel again, we're not just getting the surface stuff. We're kind of understanding how what we see fits into the deeper history of the place.
You know, so often I started my career, Rob, giving budget travel tips. You know, everybody wanted to know the cheap tricks. And that was my thing back, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Now I find that, you know, the price is about the same, but you can get double the experience if you bring some context to it, if you know what you're looking at. And that's sort of the high-minded approach I have to tour guiding. And I'm so thankful to have public television, public broadcasting for my platform, because on your station, both radio and on TV, public television, you know, we can assume an attention span. We can respect people's intellect, and we can create programming not driven by a passion for keeping advertisers happy, but driven simply by a passion for inspiring people to reach out and embrace the world and celebrate the diversity and get out of their comfort zone. And in that way, you know, travel, thoughtful travel, and public broadcasting are kindred spirits. And now it's a beautiful time to reach out through public broadcasting, reach out through, you know, the books you read and the things you learn to be more comfortable with the rest of our world. And I find that, you know, there's a lot of fearful people in the United States, and there's a lot of people that are less fearful. And I think the most fearful people are the people who have no passports, who's not have the opportunity to travel, and whose worldview is shaped by commercial news media more than actual experience. And for me, to get out there, and as I'm blessed and privileged to do, spend a lot of time overseas, 4 months a year, ever since I was a kid, I know that you know, fear is for people who don't get out very much. And the flip side of fear is understanding. We gain understanding when we reach out, whether through, you know, thoughtful media or through travel itself. And we realize we're 4% of this planet, but there's 96% out there. And it just makes sense to get to know them. And it makes you a more positive person. I find the world's filled with beautiful people and a lot of joy and a lot of love. And I know that because I'm out there talking to people. I was just in Guatemala and Ethiopia and Egypt in the last season, enjoying great travels there, bringing home those shows for public broadcasting.
Talking to Rick Steves, travel writer and public TV host. Time for one more caller. I think Abigail is with us in Spooner. Abigail, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about Abigail?
Well, we moved to Spooner 4 years ago when we retired. And we live on the Yellow River, and we have kayaked every year. But this year, because we can't travel, we've made the river our travel. And we pay more attention to the colors the water is real clear on the Yellow River, and we actually get out of our kayaks and walk in the river alongside of our kayaks and feel the mud in our toes and pick up stones and really appreciate the river much more than we ever did when we were out and about and traveling. And now with the colors starting to change a little bit, it's going to be glorious. And it just, you realize how much you have right in your backyard.
I love it,
Abigail. That's beautiful. I love that. And I've done the same thing, Abigail. I walked through the old historic cemetery in my town as a tourist would, and I learned a lot. I've never done that in my whole life. I've read the historic plaques in my town about each of the buildings. My friend and I took a kayak ride down the local little stream here, and we picked blackberries accessible only by kayak. And you know, it's just a chance to, I walked through the green space, a little park 6 blocks from my house, and it's got old growth forest in there, and I'd never ventured in there even though I've driven by it all my life. There's so much right here to celebrate and appreciate. And then when we're able to travel again, and I'm sure that day will come, we can do that as well. But for the time being, it's really important that we are patient and embrace the science and work together as a community so we can make our country, you know, safe and healthy, and then we're open again to the world.
Thanks for that call. And Rick, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Rob. And as I say these days, happy travels, even if we're just staying home for a while.
That was Rick Steves, the author of a travel guidebook series, host of Rick Steves Europe, the public television series, and the podcast Travel with Rick Steves. He joined us to talk about how he's been traveling at home since the pandemic began. Coming up after the news, a Milwaukee cookbook author shares recipes that are fast, healthy, and most definitely tasty. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Have you checked out WPR.org lately? You can listen to past shows, read both fun and informative digital articles, and get the latest from the WPR News Department. Check it all out at WPR.org. Now, if you're into healthy cooking and eating, you might be familiar with our next guest. Aaron Clark is a Milwaukee resident and the founder of the blog Well Plated with Aaron. The gist is healthy recipes that are easy to follow, use common ingredients, are affordable, and of course, taste good. Now she's out with a cookbook. There's lots of advice in there too, like how to instantly become a better cook, must-have kitchen tools, pantry staples, and more. It's called the Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Erin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
How did you first get into cooking, Erin?
Well, my love of cooking started in the dessert category. I grew up baking with my grandmothers in Wichita, Kansas, and every week during the summer, my Grammy would pick us up, bring us over to her house, and she would have picked out a different dessert recipe. I credit her with my sweet tooth. And we would make it together, and at that moment, I really fell in love with being in the kitchen, not only for the process, but also because I just really enjoyed the memories and the sense of community that I've always experienced with my family there. So fast forward to college, I make a pretty mean cake. But when I graduated, it turns out that you can't live on grandma's brownies and cookies the way that I think we all probably wish that we could. So I realized I'm probably going to have to learn how to cook something else for myself. So I went to the library, checked out a big stack of cookbooks. I started going to farmers markets. I still had a lot of student loans at this time, so budget was definitely a consideration for me. And I was also becoming more mindful about how I could eat more nutritiously. So pair that with this very classic Midwestern upbringing where, you know, the vegetables that were the star of the show in my family were corn and potatoes, or they came out of a can. And I found myself really enjoying playing around in the kitchen, creating lighter versions of the comforting dishes that I had enjoyed. And all along while this was happening, I've always loved writing. A friend of mine who knew that I really enjoyed writing and who knew I enjoyed cooking suggested that I start a food blog. Now, this is 2012, and while food blogs are a fairly popular commodity now, back then I have this vivid memory of Googling what is a food blog, and I pulled it up, seemed like people were posting some photos and recipes. I had a flip phone with a camera on it, so I thought, hey, I can do this too. And the very first recipe that I posted was a lightened up version of the green chili chicken enchiladas that my Grammy makes for us every Christmas. I thought that I was just kind of putting this out in the universe and nobody was going to click on it. But lo and behold, a few days later, a girlfriend of mine from high school messaged me to say that they'd made the enchiladas, loved them. Did I have any more recipes? And I thought, well, I guess I do. And now we can fast forward almost 10 years and 1,400 recipes later. And I still love the feeling of sharing recipes and having people make them as much today as I did back then.
We'll check out a couple of the recipes you shared with us in just a couple minutes. But also in your cookbook, you share, you know, kind of a best of lists of different kinds of advice. One is some easy ways to add a little extra healthiness, sneak in a little extra good stuff to our food to make it healthier. What are a couple of your either throw-ins or substitutions that you keep going back to?
This is so key for me when it comes to cooking healthy food in general, because we all want to eat food that tastes great. So rather than having to start from scratch, I'm a big believer in making small changes. Some of those would include where you might typically make spaghetti with white regular pasta noodles. Try a whole grain noodle. I bet it will surprise you, and you're going to get more fiber and nutrients in your diet than you would with the white pasta. Another signature swap of mine is to use plain non-fat Greek yogurt in situations that would typically call for sour cream. It has that same delicious creaminess, that light tang, but it's really high in protein and is much more nutritionally valuable than sour cream. So just really looking for I don't think you necessarily need to overhaul your cooking. They're just small changes that you can make here and there that make a big impact in the long term.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Erin Clark. Her new cookbook is The Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. By the way, you can find some recipes that Erin has shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. And let's get into one of those now, Erin. And a regular Food Friday listeners know I look forward to winter squash season every year, one of my favorite seasonal produces in the world. One of the recipes you shared with us is a butternut squash chicken and wild rice casserole. It sounds great. Tell us about it.
I adore this recipe. When you think of how the feeling of comfort and warmth being wrapped up in a hug that we all crave in the fall, this recipe is that very embodiment. It's also a casserole, which I have a very deep childhood love for. I think that a number of us in Wisconsin can appreciate the sensibility of a dish where everything is all in one pan. What makes this one special is that it includes every single food group that you need. And I think that like when we try to think about eating a healthy diet, something that I hear from a lot of people that is intimidating is the fact that you feel like there's so many separate things that you need to prepare. Okay, well, we need a meat. Now on this side, it's supposed to be healthy, so I'm going to have to add a vegetable over here. And before you know it, your list of things you have to cook for dinner is a mile long. A recipe like this butternut squash casserole, you have the whole grains from the wild and brown rice. We've got our vegetable from our absolutely delicious butternut squash. I love butternut squash so much too. It's one of my favorites. Yeah. You have your lean protein from the chicken. And then for a little bit of deliciousness, because healthy food should never be bland or taste like a sacrifice, you've got the dried cranberries, the Parmesan, the thyme, the pecans. You don't need a lot of those special ingredients, but when you finish a dish with them, it turns it into something that you feel like you have to eat or you should eat into something that you'll legitimately crave.
And the one dish philosophy here fits into something you do throughout the book. Some of your recipes, you say, are a little more long and involved when you got the time to do it. But you also pay attention to those times when people don't have a lot of the time, like kind of making your own McMuffin sandwiches at home, but having them frozen and ready to rock in the morning. Talk about the importance of having those, I got 5 minutes to make a meal kind of options.
I get it. I am a full-time food blogger and cookbook author, and I have nights where I do not want to cook or I do not have time to cook. That is the situation that we all live in. And when I approach a recipe, what is most important to me is I want it to be attainable in your kitchen and in your everyday life. And so in addition to having some of those special recipes, a few of my favorites are in the cookbook. I go into 4 unboring ways to use shredded chicken, because while it's great if you have time to cook your own chicken, and I give you ways to do that in the book, you know what? Store-bought rotisserie chicken is a fantastic tool. So I've included a few quick and easy things you can do with it. Different ways that you can top a baked sweet potato, different things you can do with a can of chickpeas. When you have these simple quick fire recipes in your arsenal, then a night when you might be tempted to call for takeout, knowing that you can pull something delicious and nutritious out in 15 minutes can be the difference in a home cooked meal versus not.
Let's bring on a caller. Chris is with us in Adams. Chris, hi.
Hi. I have food allergies, and I'm on a grain-free anti-inflammatory diet. I'm also allergic to nightshade vegetables. The last one really nails me because I love tomatoes and peppers so much. But I have a couple of substitutes for people that want to go completely cereal grain-free, and some other suggestions. Instead of the whole wheat spaghetti noodles, you can buy sweet potato noodles at the Asian food store, and they take a little getting used to. But they're really, really good for you. You should eat a sweet potato every day. And the other thing I wanted to say is that quinoa is, it also takes a little getting used to because it has kind of a strange texture. But it's also really good for you. It's very high in protein, and you can use it as a substitute for rice or whatever.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Aaron, have you worked with things like that, things you'd put in place of grain, either because you need to, like Chris does, or because you want to, because some people like quinoa and sweet potato substitutions and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. So another really popular one, like those sweet potato noodles. Chris, my husband, and I actually really like those too. Or what? Sometimes we'll do zucchini noodles, especially in the summer where I feel like I have zucchini coming out of my ears. And for those, it's a really great way to sneak in an additional serving of vegetables without feeling like you're making a sacrifice. And something else that my husband and I will do sometimes for those who don't have dietary restrictions is you can even make spaghetti with half whole wheat noodles and half vegetable noodles. And that kind of gives you the best of both worlds for those who are able to do that.
Thanks for that call, Chris. It's Food Friday. We're talking about healthy, easy, affordable, and tasty cooking with Erin Clark. She's a Milwaukee resident who blogs at Well Plated by Erin. Her book is called The Well Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. We've got 3 of those recipes posted at WPR.org/Food Friday. Butternut squash chicken and wild rice casserole, killer kale salad, and chocolate-covered strawberry brownies. And we want to hear from you. What's a quick, healthy, cheap dish that you like to prepare? Tweet us at Central Time WPR and let us know. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday. We're talking about quick, affordable, and healthy cooking with Erin Clark. She's a Milwaukee resident and creator of the Well Plated by Erin blog. She's the author of the book, The Well Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. And we want to hear from you. What are your favorite healthy recipes? What are some hacks you use to make your dishes healthier? Got any tricks on making them tastier? Tweet us at Central Time WPR and let us know. Erin, let's check out another recipe you've shared with us. We've got it at WPR.org/Food Friday. This kale salad. Now you've got the fundamental recipe here and some variations too, which I love. Tell us about your kale salad.
First of all, I would just like to apologize to everyone who's had a terrible kale salad and who heard the words kale salad and thought, oh no, this girl is not for me. The one big tip that I can give you to make a truly killer kale salad, I meant it when I named that recipe, is to really get your hands in there and massage the kale. It breaks down its fibers and it turns it into something that only a bunny would sniff, into a salad that is really soft and buttery and can take on a lot of different flavors. And that once you have your kale ready to go, it can actually last in your refrigerator for several days. So it's a great thing to prep once and then enjoy all week long. So the kale starts with a base, and then from there that I have given different variations for ways you can take that same salad and create different spin-offs for the season. So I have a harvest version, we have a Mediterranean version, and a Mexican version. They all start with the same building blocks of your kale, great grain like quinoa is excellent mixed in there, some kind of beans for some protein, and then really just the fun and yummy mix-ins like cheese and nuts. And if you take, say, 40 minutes to prep a huge batch on the weekend, you'll be able to enjoy healthy lunches all week long. And I love this whole idea of just taking a single base recipe and then building on it. You can learn one technique and then enjoy it over and over again. It makes your cooking less stressful and more exciting too.
I was going to say, I love that mindset, and it's along the lines of your, you know, four uses for shredded chicken and that kind of thing. It's learn this precise recipe and then you can replicate this precise recipe in the future. Instead, it's learn this basic thing and then you get to do what you want with it, which I appreciate.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, I don't want to go to the grocery store and go shop for the one ingredient I don't have, which is why it's great to have just a really simple formula that you can then swap in and out the different things that you either have on hand or that you just personally prefer.
We heard from Kelly in Green Bay, who wants to know if there's a way, a substitution for making basil pesto. Kelly says to make it less fattening. Now, I'm thinking of basil pesto and there's some nuts and olive oil, which I hear, I'm no nutritionologist, but I hear those are the good fats. That said, do you have thoughts on healthy pesto, Erin?
Well, it was Kelly, right?
Kelly, yeah.
Yeah, Kelly, you need my cookbook because you and I have extremely similar feelings about pesto. I actually have a recipe in my book for creamy basil pesto. And my trick is that I swap out some of the oil for Greek yogurt. I was not kidding when I said it was one of my favorite healthy ingredients earlier. It makes the pesto thick and creamy, but it's still really luscious and rich and far less fattening. I also sneak in some extra veggies there. Rather than doing entirely basil, I do a mix of half basil and half spinach. The spinach is so mild, you can't even taste it, and yet you're adding so much more nutritional benefit to your pesto. I have 4 containers of it in my freezer right now, and I just can't wait till the winter day when I get to pull out and enjoy it.
All right, Kelly, I hope that helps you out. It is Food Friday. We're talking to Erin Clark about her new book, The Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Erin, by the way, a Milwaukee resident. Let's get to the third recipe you shared with us, Erin. Getting back to your baking days, the recipe is chocolate-covered strawberry brownies. I'll say you had me at chocolate-covered strawberry brownies. Tell us about these. They sound great.
I am a big believer that everyone should have a back pocket brownie recipe. It is a life necessity. And for me, when I'm craving a brownie, I typically was craving it about 20 minutes ago. And so when I set out to create this recipe, I was determined that I could come up with a stellar, lightning fast brownie recipe that could be made in one bowl. I absolutely hate doing dishes, hence the other reason for the large number of one pan and one pot suppers in my cookbook. I just don't want to wash dishes. And so these brownies are a stellar base. They're just nice and fudgy, a little crackly, crispy on the top. And then the suggestion that I have in the cookbook is to layer on fresh strawberries and a drizzle of chocolate. It makes them really special and memorable. But if that's not your thing, or you just are feeling like you need to dig into your brownie immediately, you can enjoy it on its own. I've included a version for topping it off with sea salt and caramel. Possibilities are really limited only by your imagination.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. And yeah, do you go with the berries of the season sometimes with that?
Oh, that is a fantastic idea. Absolutely. Earlier this summer, I did a version of these with raspberries and white chocolate. It was to die for.
Oh, that sounds so good. I love the sound of that. Hey, let's talk about equipment a little bit. I know there's one kitchen gadget that, it's a desert island pick for you. What is your essential kitchen piece of gear that you would not be left without?
I am a big believer in a really good quality chef's knife. I don't think that you need a bunch of fancy kitchen gadgets to be a great cook. Those things are fun, but I'm actually, despite being a cook for my full-time job, very much a minimalist in the kitchen. I don't need a garlic press. I'm really happy with my great chef's knife. It will make every kitchen task that much quicker and easier for you.
And then for cookware, I understand you're a big fan of your Dutch oven.
Oh, I take it to bed with me at night. No, I really do. That is an investment piece that will last a lifetime. I received mine for a wedding gift going on 9 years ago, and I have beaten it up and used it several times a week, and it serves me just as well today as it did back then.
Now, I want to go behind the scenes a little bit. You've shared a lot, hundreds of recipes on your food blog, and you've got a lot in the cookbook. What goes into testing a recipe and making sure that when you put it into written form, you have conveyed your intent and what you actually do in the kitchen?
It's once I have the concept for a recipe down, you know, say I decide I want to make a really great recipe for homemade fried rice. I will think through every single component because I'm not just walking into the kitchen, throwing it together for my husband and I to eat for dinner that night. I am trying to compile it so that you, your home, and your kitchen can recreate it with the same success. So I plan out every ingredient to make sure that you can find it at my barometer of whether or not an ingredient will go into my cookbook is, can I find it at Pick and Save here right down the road in Milwaukee? If I can't, there's no reason for me to think you can find it in your kitchen either. I'll cut it out or come up with something else that you can find. I think about the number of pots and pans you're going to get dirty. And I'm not going to ask you to measure a million different spices and get every single bowl dirty because, like we talked about, cooking dinner at all, let alone a healthy dinner, is a challenge. And so with every recipe, I try to eliminate every possible barrier to that. I meticulously write out every recipe and adjust the notes as I go along. And then I test multiple times. So for me, the most important part of writing my cookbook was that the recipes work. No matter how beautiful a cookbook looks, it won't do you any good if the recipe doesn't turn out. And so for that reason, the recipes in my book, I personally tested those brownies. I think I tested those brownies about 10 times. I have a very vivid memory of weeping into a pan of those brownies when my sister was here because they weren't just right.
Uh-oh.
In addition to testing myself, I ask close friends and family to test them for me as well, just to make sure that it turns out as well for them as it does for me.
In our last minute, you're in Wisconsin, I'm in Wisconsin. Let's talk about cheese. You are a very strong advocate of grating your own cheese as opposed to buying pre-grated. Why is it such a big difference maker?
That is one tip that every single person listening can do right now that will automatically make their food taste better. When you buy pre-packaged, pre-shredded cheese, it is typically coated with a powder-like substance to keep it from all clumping together in the bag. That substance not only dilutes the cheese's flavor, it also makes it so it doesn't melt as well. So if you've ever wondered why your cheese might not be as stretchy or as creamy, that can be a big reason. It's also a lot more affordable to buy cheese and grate it yourself off the block. I like to do it all at once, sometimes in my food processor, throw it in a plastic container, and then I can just keep it in my refrigerator and it is good to go.
Erin, that's a great piece of advice to leave us with. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Erin Clark is a Milwaukee resident and creator of the Well Plated by Erin blog. We talked with her about her book, The Well Plated Cookbook, Fast Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. We've got three of her recipes posted at WPR.org/Central Time. Butternut squash, chicken and wild rice casserole, three variations of killer kale salad, and chocolate covered strawberry brownies. Give them a shot this weekend. Let us know how they turned out over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. If you're looking for a special treat this holiday season for your dog, it's not too late. A new song recorded at Abbey Road Studio, home of the Beatles in London, England, was recorded with dogs in mind, and its creators say it's the first ever dog-focused Christmas carol. As reported by ABC, the song is called Raise the Woof. It was released last month. It features a simple reggae background, but it has lots of dog-friendly sounds and lyrics, including doorbell sounds, squeaky toys, humans giving voice commands like sit or invitations like walkies or supper time, and lots of high-pitched sounds that are perfect for a dog's hearing range. The producers of Raise the Woof say they scientifically tested lots of different sounds and based the final cut on how attentive and excited the dogs were. The two-minute song is being used as a holiday fundraiser for a mental health organization called Dudes and Dogs. Here's a little taste of the song. Content warning, your dog may get excited hearing this, or it may not. Either way, good doggy. This is Central Time.
Sit. Sit. Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. Who's this? Who's this? Would you like to go on walkies? Sit. Sit.